This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. If you've lived in your home for any time at all, chances are you've accumulated some things, maybe a lot of things. And when it comes time to move, say, to a smaller place, well, what do you do with all that stuff? Maybe you're moving to a space of similar size or a larger place. Well, do you want to haul everything you've accumulated to your next home, pay movers for the privilege? Are there boxes of things you haven't looked at in years? Maybe you're not moving, but you're feeling buried by stuff. Bursting closets, stacks of magazines, knickknacks inherited from a great aunt. Well, fear not. Help is on the way. On the program today, we're joined by two women who can offer us some good advice to get it together and maybe get rid of it. Our guests are Linda Hetzer and Janet Hullstrand, authors of Moving On, A Practical Guide to Downsizing the Family Home. Not long ago, they helped their fathers move from their family's homes into apartments. They've learned, as they put it, how to get rid of stuff, keep the memories, and maintain the family peace. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments for our guests this afternoon, Linda Hetzer and Janet Hullstrand. Maybe you have some advice you can share with us. Join the discussion with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Moving On, A Practical Guide to Downsizing the Family Home is published by Stuart Tabori and Chang. Linda Hetzer and Janet Hullstrand, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You.
Timely topic, as I imagine that there are a lot of people at this point in the year picking up and moving from one place to another. And here I have a question that I would like both of you to answer. When it came time to help your fathers move from their family homes, your family homes, and into a smaller place, into apartments, what was the biggest challenge you faced, Linda?
I think the biggest challenge was going through the enormous amount of stuff that we had. My father had lived in the house where I grew up for 50 years. And there was 50 years worth of stuff. And I think to sort through it all, to decide what was important, to try to divide it all up, just the sheer enormity of it all was the biggest challenge.
Yeah. Janet?
Well, in my case also, there was an awful lot of stuff in the house. My father had lived in that home for 35 years. It was the house I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my mother was a saver. Both of my grandparents, sets of grandparents, were savers. So there was really just a huge amount of things. And some of them were just valuable. Some of them were valuable, but they were sort of mixed in with a lot of things that needed to be thrown out. So there was a lot of just sifting through things, as I think Linda just mentioned. In addition, I had the challenge of living halfway across the country.
Oh, my.
I was living in New York City at the time, and my father, I grew up in Minnesota, and that's where the house was. So I have a brother and sister who lived close to him, and between the three of us, sort of working together, we did it over a period of time. But it involved, for me, long-distance travel back and forth. And that made, you know, that presented different challenges. But that is a pretty common scenario,
sure,
I think, for a lot of people.
Sure. Linda, do you have siblings?
Yes. I'm one of five, actually. And two of us live close enough that we could do this, you know, go out for the day, which was fortunate. But one of the added challenges in my case was that the house had been put on the market and had sold very quickly.
Oh.
So we were up against a time constraint.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you mentioned that because you opened the first chapter with a question, when is it time to empty the house? And you say there are two answers. Linda, I'll let you take this one because it seems like you've been there.
Well, actually, the main answer to that question is it's always time. It's time to start as soon as you even begin thinking about it. And that's really the challenge, that before your house is sold, in my case, it's necessary to start thinking about it. And whether you act on that may happen a little bit further down the road, but it's important to start thinking about it and talking about it, sharing the information if your parents are are both still alive, to talk with them about what they want done with their things. It's important to talk with your siblings about who wants what and who's going to do what, who's going to help out, and where you want things to go. And all of those things can be discussions long before anything is actually moved out of the house.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is something that everybody would benefit from, and that is in terms of you know, keeping the stuff down to a roar.
Absolutely. That's really true, and it's sort of one of the things that not only we learned in the process of emptying out these homes, but the people that we have talked to along the way, both in researching the book and then just talking about, with people now that the book is out, a really common reaction after having emptied out a family home full of decades worth of accumulated possessions is to feel sort of differently about collecting those possessions in the first place and just kind of keeping on top of the situation on a continuing basis, because really if you're not sort of thinking that way all along and sort of keeping that process going, that's what makes for a kind of overwhelming situation.
Yeah. Now, the things you learned along the way with your dads, have they influenced you about how you think about the things that your homes contain? Linda?
Yes, very definitely. I think that we need to, what Janet and I have been calling proactive downsizing, that whether we're moving or not, that it's important to decide what's important to us in our lives and what really isn't important, and to know how to go about going through things, even if you're not going to be packing them into boxes. For instance, children's clothing, toys, school papers, how to go through that periodically so that it doesn't become so overwhelming. That should be done probably, I mean, at least once a year, if not twice a year, to get rid of those. Things like your own clothing, to start going through them and things that you, I mean, all of those organizing people who have organizing websites say if you haven't worn it in a year, you know, you're not going to wear it. It's to put into action what those sites and organizers tell us. If you're not going to wear it, get rid of it. There are lots of places where you can donate the clothing to people who would benefit from it.
Yeah.
Books, to periodically go through your books, they can also be donated to various places, the public library amongst them. They're just ways to make your life a little easier, a little simpler.
Yeah.
Without having to wait for such an enormous life change as a move.
Yeah, or an emergency.
Yes.
You know, because sometimes, even though, you know, we might be kind of, you know, thinking about these things, but if someone becomes seriously ill or there's a death, and this can happen to anybody at any age. So it just makes it makes sense on a number of levels.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, is not only what to get rid of, but what to save. And as you say, if someone becomes ill or dies very suddenly, it's nice to know that you have things that you want to keep, important family items, whether they're valuable or not. But anything, I mean, things like a marriage certificate, the family Bible, things that are important, it's nice to know where they are.
Yeah.
And that you have them in a safe place.
Yeah, and if there are photographs, that they be stored properly so that they don't deteriorate, so that you can hand them down.
Absolutely.
Right, stored properly, and also it's really important that they be labeled because if something unexpected happens, sometimes the identities of the people, you have these nice old photographs, but it's possible for people at a certain point to not know who they are. And that's really sad when that happens.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we also sort of encourage people to do, and that we thought a lot about as we were writing the book, is not only figuring out which physical items you want to save, but also ways of sort of capturing the memories, whether it's through taped conversations or videotape, or even just writing down stories that your parents or whoever may tell you that in connection with the objects. A lot of times there are objects in a home that have special meaning, but of course that meaning disappears
right.
eventually, unless the stories are retold and then somehow saved
yeah.
for future generations.
Yeah. Well, some time ago, my mother, moving with her husband to another state, gathered all of us children around her, and we went through everything she asked us to. And while it seemed at first a bit of a chore,
mm-hmm.
we found ourselves reminiscing and having a pretty good time.
Yeah.
And later, then we had dinner, and later she brought together all the boxes of photographs that she had collected. And these were taken over the course of, you know, 2-3 generations. And everyone came away with a great big stack of wonderful pictures and mementos from her life, you know, little pins and, you know, things that said that she had served in such an organization and that kind of thing that were very meaningful to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a nice thing to be able to do when there isn't the pressure of, although your mother had the pressure of moving, it was not the pressure of any other kind of major event. And it's so nice to be able to do that as a family. And to do that together and to, as you said, to come away with such a wonderful feeling about it.
Yeah.
And some families just wait too long, and then that ends up being things to be fought over rather than things to be reminisced over.
Yeah, well, I really salute my mother because she had it organized and she asked us to do it, and she led the way.
Oh, that's just wonderful. Really,
that's really perfect when it can happen that way. Yeah.
Your mother.
Yeah, yeah. And I imagine that, you know, that sometimes it doesn't happen that way, that there's no one in the lead and suddenly children are thrown together and we've got to make a move here. What kind of advice do you have for siblings coming together? Perhaps it can be pretty stressful, depending on the situation,
mm-hmm.
in going through things and making decisions, because one child's treasure is another kid's junk, if you know what I mean. I think there's an anecdote in the book where a woman is going through her mother's closet and she's finding it very difficult to sort through the clothing, and her brother says, well, it's all junk. And she goes down to the basement and he's going through dad's tools, and to him these are precious, and she says, well, that's all junk.
Exactly. Yeah, people respond differently to different kinds, categories of objects. And I think that what we suggest is that it's really important, first of all, to recognize that and to take the time to sit down and talk really before things start getting tossed out or before anything happens. The first step is sort of, one of the people we talked to said, the first step is to think it through. Which sounds like sort of an obvious thing, but it's not actually, because a lot of people don't take the time to do that. They sort of jump in, and there's a lot of reasons to have that happen. There may be various pressures that are sort of making people feel hurried, but we think it's really important for a lot of reasons for people to take the time to think it through and talk with each other about what's going to happen and when and how, and give everybody a chance to sort of express their feelings about whatever categories or particular items they may have special feelings about, so that it's hard enough as it is.
Right.
But so that everybody can have a chance to feel like their feelings are being respected and time to make the decisions they need to make.
Yeah. Well, let's talk in a moment. Let's talk about the nitty-gritty of that plan, of that planning process. But first, let's go and talk with some callers who are joining us now. And our guests this afternoon, listeners, Janet Hallstrand and Linda Hetzer, authors of Moving On, A Practical Guide to Downsizing the Family Home. We're talking about moving this afternoon. We're talking about organization. And you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. The phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL, 333-WILL. Caller on line one in Champaign. Go ahead.
Given your topic, I can't resist giving people in Champaign-Urbana a place to take things as they downsize. The University YMCA this week is accepting household goods and clothes and almost any kitchenware things, which we will then have a big sale in the fall when students come back. So just want to let people know, University Y at 1001 South Wright.
Okay, and then when is the sale?
The sale is August 25, 26, 27, and 28.
Okay.
At Stock Pavilion.
At the Stock Pavilion. Okay.
At the university.
Very good. Thank you for that call.
Thank you
for that reminder. Next, we're going to talk with a listener on line two on a cell phone. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I wanted to say that sometimes families end up with things like old Bibles with family data or old pictures, and they don't know who they are. They might be labeled, but you don't know who they are. And if people have the time to Xerox any family data and the title page of a Bible, there are places where you can send that information. The historical societies and so forth and so on collect and will store that information for somebody else to find, even if you don't know how it's related. And sometimes if you hang on to those things and work on them another time, you begin to figure out who these people are. There are also message boards, surname message boards on genealogy websites, and people love to find or to get photographs of people who are related to them. And even if there are pictures of friends of the family, and you think, why do I care about these? I realize that it's a low down on the totem pole in terms of trying to get a family member moved, but sometimes we end up being custodians of those things, and it's really helpful to other people to have that information. So I just wanted to suggest that. And the other thing I would like to suggest is that if there are papers you need to go through and don't have time, and sometimes it's just best to stick them in storage and come back and get them when you have more time to deal with it, the things that you don't have time to process, and that you... Because sometimes things can be thrown away that you really wish you'd had more time to deal with.
I'd just like to comment about that. We absolutely do advocate storage in cases like that. And the problem with storage, though, is that often people use it and then don't want to go back. They can't quite get themselves to go back and go through those things. So it's really a kind of a double-edged sword in a way. I mean, if someone has these family papers and that you know it's something that you want to go through, then absolutely store it, whether it's in a paid facility or whether it's in someone's attic. Just be careful of the conditions if they are old papers, so that the conditions don't cause deterioration in your old photographs or your old papers. But definitely, that's a great suggestion. Often, if you're doing this when someone's moving out of a house, the times are just too fraught and too emotional to have the time and the leisure to sit down and read through these things. But be careful about storage, because sometimes people put things in there and then they forget about them, or they just don't want to go back to do it, and then eventually those storage units are emptied out and auctioned off. And so the people who actually own them don't really get to
good point. In our family, at one point, my mother-in-law was developing dementia and needed to be moved, and it helped her to say to her, "We're putting some of your things in storage, and you can go see them." She needed to downsize, and we weren't able to divide everything up. I mean, there were things that people wanted, but we didn't have space for yet. Who would in a year or two? It helped her to think that she would have access to that stuff. She never used it because she forgot about it once she moved. But it helped in psychologically in getting her moved into assisted living, because she wasn't giving up all of her stuff yet.
That's a very good point. That's a very comforting thing to say to someone.
Yeah, and I think you said a couple of really interesting and good things. One of them is using local historical societies as they're a wonderful resource. And we hadn't thought actually or talked about them providing assistance in actually identifying people. I don't know, but certainly that would be one place to look to. They are a good place to think about if a family comes to a point where there are old personal papers or photographs or, you know, things that a historical society might want. They are very interested in seeing things, and you know, sometimes if it's not right for their historical society, there's a way that local historical societies work with each other to sort of get things back to the right place. And so it's good to think about, you know, rather than pitching a bunch of old papers that nobody in the family wants into the trash, to think about if maybe it should take that intermediary step where somebody can look at it and say, well, you know, these are things that are really valuable for society to sort of hang on to. And the other, I like the phrase you used that sometimes people become custodians of special things that may not be special to you, yourself, or your family, but when it's possible, and I know it's not always, but when possible, sometimes taking that extra time can also allow for getting some of those things back to the right families or, as I said, even to a local historical society so that there's a chance for these things to survive and be valued and for everybody.
Yeah. Well, something else that the caller mentioned was you might regret getting rid of something that at the time it seemed like the right thing to do, but gosh, I sure would like to have that now. That's got to be a pretty common regret. Is that true?
Yes, it is. And it's, I mean, the thing is, once it's gone,
it's gone.
It's gone. So I think that really erring on the side of caution is advisable because, you know, once it's gone, it's gone. And we did hear that a lot, that people wish that they had not been quite so hasty in getting rid of things.
And one of the things when we talk so much about taking your time and also starting early, those both contribute towards helping you think about things over time. It gives you a chance to think about it, to discuss it with your siblings, to talk about it with your parents. And it gives you more options to think about saving things that you might not have thought about before.
Yeah. Well, when it comes time at our house to go through things and try and do some jettisoning, we try and sort things by, well, we're keeping this for sure, and this we can get rid of. And that stuff in the middle, well, I think what we do generally is we try and get back to it, but we say, well, this we don't know, but so we'll just leave it in the I don't know what to do with this stack. And hopefully we'll get round to it. Sometimes we're better at that than other times. But is that a fairly good way to go at it? Although, as I've mentioned here, you know, the problem is, are you going to get round to the stuff you don't know what to do with?
I think it is a good way to go. And I think congratulations of getting rid of the stuff in the to give away pile. I think a lot of people have problem even getting that far. And I think that the what do we do with it pile, the next time you go through things, some of those things will end up in the pile to get rid of things. And so I think that it's a cycle, that if we do it on a regular basis, that it's a way of weeding out things. And another thing I'd like to mention is that I think that people can have an easier time if you deal with the things that have less emotional input.
Mm.
So for some people, that might be their clothing. And they might easily be able to say, well, I'm not wearing this. I can donate this. I can give to charity these pieces of clothing. For other people, it might be other categories. I mean, all the kitchen equipment we have, or it's just easier. And I think it's easier to get rid of things when you're not emotionally attached, obviously. So that would be a good place to start, besides dividing things up, but to say, okay, today we're going to deal with maybe the children's toys. And they can get rid of the things that they've outgrown, that they realize that they don't play with anymore.
Yeah.
And so that by working in categories of things like that, it might be easier.
Yeah. What about the folks among us who just find it hard to part with anything?
I think we're all guilty of that.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
A greater or lesser, yeah. Yeah.
For some people, I think they can benefit by when they understand that the items that they are having trouble parting with still have a good life left to them, but they can be in someone else's life. And I think that encouraging people to donate and to say there's somebody else who can use these clothes, They don't have to hang in your closet year after year. Somebody else would love to read these books. You've read them. You're done with them. Old magazines. I mean, I think any hospital waiting room welcomes having magazines. You can weed them out, the ones you're done with, and you can pass them on to someone who can read them. There are so many ways. I mean, children's toys can go to a daycare center. I think encouraging people to see from a slightly more global point of view that we're not saying throw them in the trash, but rather, you know, pass them on to another life.
Well, let's get down to the nitty-gritty of coming up with a plan and beginning. You know, it can seem so overwhelming, especially if a house or an apartment, a home is you know, just brimming with things, you know, from a full life, well-lived and loved, and there's all this stuff. It can be overwhelming, even if you're ready to have things go on to another individual or to take on another life somewhere else. Where do you start?
Well, one place to start, I think, would be to start with the person whose house it is. So if you're talking about your parents, for instance, and they are still living in the house, the first thing, of course, is to find out what they don't think they need any longer and also what things they want to pass on to people. They often have their own very clear ideas about which of their children they want to inherit certain things, or perhaps if it's not their children, maybe their nieces or nephews. And I think it would be, the first place would be to talk to them, to talk to your parents and say, you know, it's time to start thinking about this. What are your thoughts about this? Where do you want things to go? What don't you want anymore? And take notes.
Likewise, if it's the parents, and in some cases it's children helping their parents move out of their home. In some cases it's the parents themselves who are making the decision to move and are still healthy enough and able to do a lot of the work themselves. But in that case, I think that, you know, most people, like your mother did, call upon the help of their children or can.
Yeah, well, she also said kind of pointedly, you know, some of this stuff is your stuff.
Yeah, well, and that's, I mean, I am sure your family is. we've heard that a lot, too. I mean, that might be one place to start, is that, okay, we're ready to move, so... please, if it's yours and it doesn't belong to us, you know, that would be an appropriate time to finally for everybody to take their own things out. That might get rid of, you know, that might be a good first
good start. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, from there to sort of, as we said, it's good to sit down and to talk about what you're going to do and when, and then make a plan. It's good if everybody can be there, or at least everybody who wants to be. Can be there together for at least, you know, even a few days is good. A lot can happen if everybody's there and sort of with a focused purpose, and to start making those piles of keep, get rid of, not sure, but get rid of pile or category will then be subdivided into give away or donate. Throw away, and possibly certain things might be sold. So,
is there a room where it's easier to begin than other rooms?
I think that depends on each individual. It would just depend on what their particular likes and dislikes are. I think that for some people, I think this is true of as we're weeding out things. For some people, it might be old magazines. For some people, it would be clothing. For some people, it would be kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Tools and to go through those kind of things. Some people would be the linen closet.
Yeah. Well, in terms of planning, does it help to have maybe a calendar where you say, well, today we're going to try and do this, and a week from now we hope to have this done? You know what I'm saying? Kind of, you know, space it out, you know, list the tasks at hand, and how have kind of an idea of how you'll try and move through the space.
Yes, absolutely. That's actually one of the things we recommend in the book, is to have a special calendar dedicated really just to this process. And once you know that the move is going to take place, that's M Day. And then I think we called it D Day, Decision Day, is when you decide. And in between there, and, you know, it's a different, it can be quite a big range of length of time for different people in different situations. But the point is that once you've decided and you know when the move is going to take place, then you sort of can work within that framework to figure out, you know, specifically which tasks need to be done, who can do which ones, you know, when will the movers be called, if there's going to be a moving sale or estate sale, you know, when will that happen? So, yeah, having a calendar dedicated to that purpose is really helpful.
Yeah.
Another thing that can be helpful in the sort of logistical planning is to have a floor plan of the new place.
Yes. Yes. That, I thought that was brilliant.
That suggestion was given to us by one of the people we interviewed who had found it tremendously helpful when she moved.
Yeah.
And I was just going to add about the calendar is that for some people, rather than waiting until they know they're going to move, that some of this can also be a very long-range process, as Janet alluded to. And so that, if, for instance, if you were, all of the siblings are at home for a holiday, that's a good time to sit down with everybody and start talking. That, you know, eventually mom and dad are going to be moving out of this house. And it's maybe something to start thinking about. And perhaps maybe in the summertime, if some of the siblings are visiting on vacation, would be a time to start going through and even possibly having a yard sale to try to weed out some of the things. And all of those things can be done without an end date in mind, but they can be done in order to help move things along.
Yeah. For parents with adult children, what advice do you have for them in terms of starting this conversation? Because I would think that there could be families where the kids were reluctant to let go of the family house. How do parents, what kinds of things might parents want to put out on the table, and how might they approach the subject with their children? Linda?
Well, I think one of the things would be to reassure them at first that it's very difficult to talk about something that smacks so much of one's mortality. And I think that's frightening to adult children, and disconcerting to think that my parents want to talk about the eventuality of no longer being here. And I think that if that's addressed to begin with, it would help lighten the conversation a bit by saying, you know, I'm here, I'm not going anywhere, but I'm feeling the need to start thinking about where my things are going to go, and both in terms of perhaps a move to a smaller apartment, but also totally eventually when I'm no longer going to be here. And I think parents often have an idea of what they want to do with things, and that if that's brought out, I think it can be very helpful. I mean, a parent might decide that they want the family china to go to a particular child, that and perhaps that child and sibling might say, well, so-and-so doesn't really want it, but I do. And so they give it a chance to have that talked about and discussed. Things like the family piano. If none of the children have musical ability and are not interested in it, perhaps a cousin does. And maybe that's something that could come out in the discussion. Another thing is for the parents to think about actually giving gifts. We have a wonderful anecdote from someone that her mother, I believe it was, or her mother-in-law, had started giving away family items as both birthday gifts and anniversary gifts over the years. And the siblings loved it because they would get all these different things. And the mother said her only regret was that she had not started earlier.
Yeah.
In doing this.
What a great idea.
Well, we thought so, because you get the feeling of the family and the family heirlooms and the family, the things that are most interesting to the family are being passed down, often with stories about them. It doesn't have to wait for the siblings to have to sift through it later. And it's just a great way to start. And I think that the mother herself just enjoyed the process very much. And it's a way to get started without having to sort of make these heavier decisions. And so I think that if the parents think about it in those terms and think about discussing it, perhaps giving stuff away in terms of as gifts to the children, also think about getting rid of things that they no longer need. If they're no longer hosting the family holidays, perhaps they don't need a dinner service for 12. And maybe one of their children could very much use it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm beginning to think, you know, as the years pass, how smart a woman my mother is. And she took us aside individually and, you know, she wanted to know, are there things that you would like to have? And for me, one of the things that I wanted was a cracker box that my grandmother won in a card game. And the story was she won it by cheating. And so one time when I was visiting my mother, she had it all packed up and ready for me. She said, here, take it now.
Yeah, that's nice.
It is nice.
Well, another thing that if the reluctance on the part of the adult children is, or the difficulty, maybe is a better word, is in saying goodbye to that family home, with enough time, there are more and less joyful ways of going about that process, too. And a few of the people that we talked to who had enough time and said, had sort of thought about it in advance and had approached it in a certain way, they did really nice things to make their last memories in the home really joyful ones. One of the people we talked to said that they had had their daughters had invited whichever close friends that were still in the area or could be in the area to come, and they had a big party before they started packing everything up. Another person said that once they knew they were moving, this was a family who loved to cook, and they had some wonderful meals all together and sort of savored, you know, the fact that they knew that they wouldn't be doing this for a lot longer, and so they used that as an opportunity to just make the most of those last meals in that home. So there are ways to sort of ease the pain of having to, you know, say goodbye to this place. It's been a wonderful place for our family, but it really is time to leave it behind. But it's nice to have some of those kinds of memories before starting the packing.
Yeah. When should you think about getting some assistance, whether it's, you know, professional movers or calling in an appraiser or maybe getting some help from a cleaning service? Advice on those issues?
I think that would depend on the situation in terms of what kind of help that is. For instance, an appraiser, the reason to call in an appraiser is if you think something has value and you want to know that before you either pass it down to one of the siblings or if you then decide that you'd rather sell it and divide the money. So an appraiser can help you know whether something's valuable or not in terms of financially valuable. It may be emotionally valuable. And so that you would want to bring somebody in earlier on to let you know if there are a number of things, what's valuable, and where the appraiser can also help you in terms of where to sell it, if it's better to go to auction or to sell it in an estate sale. The moving companies, you can't really set that up until you know how much stuff is actually going to be moved.
Right.
Because they work by volume and weight. And if you are going to empty most of the things out, they would need to know that because they wouldn't be advising you on the entire contents of the house.
Yeah, another reason to get rid of stuff because it costs you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And there are other ways to get help. You can get a number of people in the neighborhood or extended family together and have a yard sale of things that you know that you're not going to keep. And that can happen long before you actually even have a place to move to. Or it can happen right at the beginning of the process to sort of weed out more of the things.
Mm. There's a story in the book about a woman tells a story that she found herself in the lead because her other siblings were not available that couldn't deal with it. But yet, you know, she didn't get angry, it seems to me. If that's the situation, do you remember the anecdote that I'm referring to? And maybe you could offer us some advice, some tips on, in terms of if you're in that position, you know, how do you keep going all by yourself, and how do you keep things in perspective so you don't find yourself, you know, raging at those who aren't there?
Well, I think in that case that you're talking about, in that specific case, it was actually the woman and a brother, and then there were several other siblings, none of whom wanted really to be involved. So it sort of fell on their two shoulders, and I'm pretty sure that first of all, it's probably easier when it happens that way than when it's just one person alone, because it really is a big job for one person. I think you're right that she didn't feel resentful. I think that she and her brother understood that, you know, for some reason. She said that it took her a while to figure out why they weren't coming around. And then she realized after a while, I guess, as the excuses mounted or whatever it was, she finally realized, well, they're not coming because this is too hard for them. And once she knew that, she and her brother that was helping her just sort of did what had to be done. And they actually did a very nice thing, which was to pick out a few special items for each of the ones that weren't coming around, you know, just on the assumption that they must want to have something. And she said that was really appreciated by those other siblings. You know, every family's different, and but I think a lot of families, in many families, there's a greater or lesser degree of interest in the project. And, you know, sometimes there are various situations that make it difficult for some siblings to be very involved. And again, I think that, you know, it's the important thing is to just realize that everybody has their own set of problems, their own emotions about it all. And if people can find ways to talk about all of that, and, you know, maybe if one sibling can't be there because of a work schedule, maybe they can be helpful in other ways. Maybe there's backup work or phone work, or, you know, maybe it comes down to money in some cases. There's always, I think, ways for members of a family to help each other. It's just not always the same way.
Yeah.
And also, I would like to add that for some people, the emotional attachment to family items is not the same among siblings. So that for some of us who felt it necessary to look through each and every item that was going out of the house, other people don't feel that way. So to say, well, you must come, just it doesn't have the same meaning for them. They don't. Some of them don't even want anything particularly. And so if they feel that way, then obviously the joy for some of us of coming across certain things that belong to our parents and grandparents and that we want to keep is, of course, tempered by the amount of work, the sheer amount of work that it takes to go through all that. But for some people, that joy isn't in there. They're not the least bit interested. And I know that was hard for me to realize, but that some people just don't have that interest. They're not as interested in the history of the family. And and that has to be recognized and acknowledged, and they're not perhaps just as interested in participating in the whole process.
Yeah. I think it's really good to sort of step back and maybe try and be aware of that. And then also within a family or within a circle of friends, if somebody's got a particular talent, make use of that. So if, you know, if somebody is an accountant or that kind of type of person, boy, that would be a big relief in my book. You know, if they'd do that.
Right.
You know, I could do something else. You know, I could make sure that everything's cleaned up and ready to go when we close the door. So I guess if you're aware of what's important to one another and what kind of tasks you'd each excel at, that's a pretty useful thing to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that doesn't, so it doesn't mean that everybody has to show up at the house at 8 a.m.
right,
and start going through the closet, because that's not everybody's greatest contribution.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon, Linda. Janet, it's been a pleasure. This is a very useful guide, even though if you're not, you know, downsizing the family home, if you're just moving away or the last little one has left for college, there's a lot of really good advice here for any kind of moving situation. And I want to thank you again for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Linda Hetzer and Janet Hullstrand have been our guests this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. They're the authors of Moving On, a practical guide to downsizing the family home, as they put it. This'll tell you how to get rid of the stuff, keep the memories, maintain the family peace, and get on with your life. The book is published by Stuart Tabori and Chang. And by the way, our guests have a website, www.movingonthebook.com.